Concerns over how long we wait for healthcare are on the rise. Whether or not wait times for particular procedures are actually increasing, the debate has gathered a certain sense of urgency. In the lead-up to the federal election, the Liberals, NDP, and Conservatives have all pledged to reduce wait times, though their claims of how they would do so vary. Meanwhile, proponents of privatization are feeding on public fears to push their agenda for for-profit clinics. Dr. Michael Reckless is a professor at the University of Toronto's Department of Health Policy, Management, and Evaluation. He is the author of the report, Public Solutions to Healthcare Waitlists, that was released recently by the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives. He's joined us this morning from Toronto. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Lisa.
So some would say that wait times are inevitable in a public system and that they're just the trade-off for keeping our system public. What's the danger of that argument?
Well, I'm glad you raised that. That unfortunately, even in the Chiuli decision from last June, the Quebec decision, which rolled back Quebec's ban against private insurance for publicly covered services and was seen widely by right and left as sort of the end of Medicare as we knew it. The judges in the minority who supported Medicare ended up saying exactly that, that a public system is a trade-off where things are fair for everyone, but people have to wait. And I think it's a real misunderstanding of where waits come from and how we can fix them. And it turns out that, in fact, that one can quite easily have a public system which has virtually no delays at all. And, in fact, at this point, what most people internationally feel is the best health system in the world, the Veterans Administration health system in the United States, is not only a publicly funded system like we have, but it's actually even publicly run, where even all the physicians are employees of the VA system. So, and they have virtually no delays in their system for family doctors, specialists, or procedures.
So let's talk a little bit about how this issue is being talked about in the lead-up to the federal election. All of the, as I said, the Liberals, the NDP, and the Conservatives are all pledging to address wait times. Do you feel that they are doing, any of them are doing a good analysis of the root of the problem?
I'm afraid to say I don't think so. I mean, there is, the analysis tends to be that if there's a wait for something, that there must not be enough of it. And sometimes that is true. We just are not, for example, implanting enough artificial hips and knees to meet the demand that's out there. So you have to pay for more of those. But on the and there are some shortages in some places of certain providers. So in Winnipeg right now, there's a private MRI clinic that's just been opened in a center owned by a Vancouver surgeon, Dr. Godley, and it's taken a full-time and a part-time MRI technician away from the Public Health Sciences Center, which means the Public Health Sciences Center has had to decrease their scans by 20 hours a week because those folks are in scarce supply. But on the other hand, that if we actually improved our systems, improved the efficiency of our systems, we'd find that many of our personnel would go much further. And a good example would be so-called advanced access or same-day service for family physicians. The Saskatoon Community Clinic, which is one of the original clinics founded in 1962 during the doctor's strike in Saskatchewan, had four-week waits for family physicians up until about a year ago. And they've re-engineered their systems, and now with virtually, with no more resources, in fact, they're down about a physician in their complement, they are now seeing patients on the same day. So sometimes there are certain resources that are scarce, and we need to put money there, but then oftentimes we can get a better result without spending more. I often use the analogy that if there's a lineup to get into a hockey arena, it doesn't mean you'd fix the problem by doubling the number of seats in the arena. In fact, you'd probably make the situation worse unless you more than doubled the doorway. So we need to be much more critical in the way we analyze flow through the system, use a lot of the techniques, in fact, that are used in other sectors to manage flow, identify bottlenecks, and put the resources where they're needed.
Your proposals, as you're saying, are rooted in a lot of management theory around queues and how to manage lines of people. Can you talk about what parts of that theory you're finding useful in this case?
Well, first of all, there is a scheme for analyzing waits and delays that is used everywhere, whether we're talking about downtown traffic lights, air traffic control, or a number of industrial processes. And I'm certainly not suggesting we treat patients like widgets or anything, but giving them better flow through the system, I think, would in fact honor their human dignity more than what we're doing now. But I'll give you a quick example. First of all, what you need to do is you need to analyze the capacity and demand for your services. And typically, in fact, health systems don't do that. When, using a family doctor's office again, if we analyze waits in a family doctor's office, which might average 4 or 6 weeks in different parts of the country, that we may find out that, in fact, the physician's office, particularly if they use their personnel better, has enough capacity to meet their demand, but they're treating last month's patients today, and then they're postponing patients that need to be seen today until next month. In that case, simply by working down the backlog with temporarily increasing resources, you would be able to go to same-day servicing. A lot of times you need to be a little bit more sophisticated because even if your average capacity is enough to meet your average demand, there are what are referred to as temporary mismatches between capacity and demand, which can, over time, lead to long waits. And I'll give you a quick example of that. Suppose you've got a service that can always treat 10 patients every day, and 10 patients show up every day, then there's never going to be a wait list. But on the other hand, that you're going to have an average number of patients that can be treated and an average number that will show up. So suppose one day there's 9 patients that show up, and you could treat 11. At that point, you've wasted 2 units of capacity, the staff time they've paid for, et cetera, the power for the operating room, et cetera, all has been wasted, and you can't push that forward to treat people in the future. On the next day, if 11 patients show up, but you can only do 9 because maybe you've got somebody on vacation, then you put 2 people on your wait list. And if you only have one of those mismatches between capacity and demand every week, over a year, you'll end up with 100 people on a wait list, and the conclusion would be we're just swamped. We need way more of everything. So so that's one of the techniques that we pick up from the use of queuing theory, as it's referred to, in applying it to the health system, is to look at capacity and demand, and most of the time, or much of the time, capacity is sufficient to meet demand, but then you have to go further and get out your calculators and look at what your variation is between capacity and demand and identify where you have mismatches. In fact, a lot of the time, the system is creating those mismatches itself by varying capacity in an irrational way. For example, if a doctor only does ward rounds on a Tuesday and a Friday, if somebody is ready for discharge on a Wednesday, they have to wait 2 extra days. That kind of thing. The health system tends to, in fact, create a lot of the variation itself, and when the variation is identified and you can start to look at the root causes, you can then start to smooth out your capacity and demand so you can meet it better throughout the year.
You also talk about changing the way we work with the multiple steps of healthcare, from a family doctor referral to a specialist to surgery and all of those many little steps that go in between. How would you propose changing that process to make the system more effective and efficient?
There's a lovely quote from a speech Tommy Douglas gave 25 years ago where he talks about how he and his family doctor laugh at the system when he needs care and he needs to go somewhere for an x-ray and then he needs to go somewhere else to see a specialist and then he needs to go see another specialist in the other part of town. And he concludes that little part of his speech by saying that he could have had all of those services in one day in one clinic if it had the capacity to see him. Well, and in fact, recently there was a very successful Alberta pilot project for orthopedic surgery that in part used this technique to dramatically reduce waits. They've opened clinics in Edmonton, Calgary, and Red Deer. Family physicians phone up the clinic. There's somebody there who helps them make sure that they've got all the tests done on their patients before they get to the center. When they get to the clinic, they see an orthopedic surgeon, they'll see a nurse, maybe a dietitian, and other people. They see everybody on the same day. And partly because of that, and maybe partly through some other techniques that we might talk about, they've been able to reduce the wait times from family physicians to knee or hip replacement from 82 weeks, which is what their average was, to 10 and a half weeks, almost a 90% reduction in wait times with very few additional resources.
You've also talked about the or proposed the creation of small-scale surgical centers that are very specialized for certain kinds of low-risk procedures. And on the surface, this sounds a lot like the for-profit surgery centers that have opened here in Vancouver and in other areas in recent years. How would these surgery centers work in the public sector?
You're raising another interesting point that if one only followed the traditional media, one would think that Dr. Brian Day, who owns the Canby Surgical Clinic in Vancouver, had invented short stay surgical centers. And in fact, the largest same day surgical center in North America, not just in Canada, is located in the west end of Toronto, the Queensway Surges Center, which is part of the Trillium Health Center, a public hospital in Toronto. It is true that specialized clinics can be much more efficient than the way we traditionally have done things, because if you're using traditional operating rooms in general hospitals, you might be doing a knee replacement and then following it by a spinal operation, and maybe later on in the day it needs to be remade up so that you can do a gallbladder. That all of this making up and taking down rooms takes a lot of time. The Queensway Surges Center, for example, which I visited on a couple of occasions, is going to do about 5,000 cataract operations this year. And they have a complete unit where all the flow is been designed completely around the needs of cataract patients. And in fact, they used a number of patients in helping them design the flow through the system, which made some changes in the way they did things. So it is true that specialized surgical centers can be more efficient, but in fact, they're going to be much more efficient if they're public. And the reason is that the Queensway Surges Center or the Pan Am Clinic in Winnipeg, which used to be a private center but then was bought by the Manitoba government, the Surges Centers are part of regional health authorities, or in Ontario where we don't yet have regional health authorities, it's part of a public hospital. So that means that these centers don't need a CEO, they don't need a human resources department, they don't need computer systems, they don't need actuaries, they don't need any of that overhead. So they are automatically going to be much more efficient than the surgical centers like the Canby Surgical Center, which are private and need a CEO and need human resource departments and all those other things that an independent unit would need.
Whether or not these proposals in your report will be implemented seems like it's mostly a question of political will. You had mentioned the Alberta example where some similar initiatives have been implemented. Are there other areas of the country where these ideas are already being put into place?
There's so much happening that's sort of under the radar, certainly, of the election media coverage. And I often feel that we're at a real point of crisis where the challenge to the public system is, can it fix itself fast enough using these techniques to reduce waits to prevent the political demand for a private system? And of course, that demand is also being carried forward by people who tend to would benefit greatly financially with a private system. In British Columbia, for example, there's a couple of interesting things happening. In October, a pilot project in Richmond reported on a hip and knee replacement project, using some of these techniques that we've been talking about, they were able to reduce the average wait time for knee and hip replacement from 19 months to 7 months. It's still not as fast as the Alberta pilot, but a dramatic reduction in wait times in a very short period of time. And in particular, they reduced the number of patients who are waiting more than 5 months by over 60%. At Surrey Memorial Hospital, there's a rebuilding program going on there, and they've created a minor treatment unit, which, again, is another good way of specializing services. A lot of patients who come to emergency departments typically need a quick examination, then they need either a lab test or an x-ray, and then the decision is made about their future care, and usually they're sent home with some sort of prescription. So imagine someone who comes in with a sprained ankle and is wondering whether it's broken and needs an x-ray to determine that, or somebody who's got a bad cough and a sore throat and might need some blood work or a chest x-ray done. If we can separate those patients into a special stream, as they've done in Britain with their so-called See and Treat program, you can dramatically reduce the wait times for those folks and reduce wait times overall. So there's a lot of interesting things happening in BC in this regard, and there's a lot of interesting things happening across the country. Unfortunately, when our coverage of Medicare seems to be limited to either problems in the public system or putative solutions in the private system, then these items don't get covered and people don't know about them.
Well, thank you very much for taking the time to talk with us this morning, Michael.
Thank you very much, Lisa, for your interest.
I've been speaking with Dr. Michael Rackliss, author of the report Public Solutions to Healthcare Waitlists that was released recently by the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives. The report can be found at policyalternatives.ca on the internet.